Back to Bibliosynensis.
Hi, everyone. Hope everyone's had a good winter, right?
Oh, my goodness. Is it already summer?
Well, it's spring still.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't tell with the weather going back and forth. It's been, like, cold and then hot.
I welcome it in California for sure.
Yes. So.
Any of you that caught our episode zero, I think we did a little quick catch-up as to why things were delayed.
Yes.
But just to sum that up, it's the fact that we are now embarking on farmers markets, and we got our commercial kitchen.
Yay!
Yeah, and we've also had a few side projects as well, now that we have the shed ready for recording.
The Mambo!
Yeah.
We're very grateful for people that have caught us on our impromptu sessions, and we hope that you could catch more of it, and hopefully this time it won't be impromptu.
Yeah, we should probably schedule it a little better.
Yeah, but we still had a few people, and I was very happy about that.
Yeah, and now that we're all vaccinated.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
I mean,
in our general circle, we'll be able to bring more people.
Yes, reach more people.
To be able to record and
do
those things.
So, this time around, I know that Bibliosynensis has been going roundabout with fiction and nonfiction, and we are finally going to tap into a type of book genre that I don't think too many people like to talk about, because they like to show it off more so.
Yeah, so this season is all about visual books.
Yes.
And we thought that we would start this lovely episode with art books.
Exactly.
And I think it's fitting. I mean, with spring here and everything being absolutely stunning and visual.
Yes. And with everyone slowly coming back to society, this would be a good refresher, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, contemplations are set aside, and enjoy the bliss while we have it. The inspiration for this actually began with a discussion of Steph here, talking about college and how she actually graduated as a graphic designer.
Yeah, actually, I started as a art history major,
right?
But I've always had a passion for the graphic arts, and Lord knows what it's done for T-Spectral's branding.
Oh, yeah.
But that was actually some of my earlier jobs in the tea industry, is I would do branding for tea companies and tea rooms.
Yeah.
And so, even till now, I still do that, but not nearly as much as my consulting.
Yes.
But.
And we can get into that soon. But being that, what are we drinking today?
So I thought it would be fitting, because it's been a while since we've introduced teas.
Yes.
And this was released in early February. This is our Art Nouveau tea.
Ah.
And this is our first ever 100% herbal. Well, actually, I can't say that. Nymph was a tisane, but I guess this is our first fully rooibos base.
Okay, please elaborate a little more.
Okay, so rooibos is a root.
Okay.
And when roasted, it tastes very similar to tea. And it's a wonderful caffeine-free alternative to black tea. And you can put milk and sugar in it and all that stuff. Personally, I've done a lot of blending with it, because when done correctly, it creates an amazing nutty note.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the most famous would be the Sweater Weather blend.
Yes.
With the rooibos, but we've used it in a few other things. I know Tiki has an unroasted rooibos, which is unique in itself, but it has more of a grassy note, almost like a mild version of Essentia. So it's a really interesting thing. I'm personally not a fan of direct rooibos flavor.
Right.
I think it can come out kind of medicine flavored.
Right.
But this blend was my, I guess, me taking a stab at trying to make a really nice, balanced rooibos.
When you say medicine, are you saying syrupy or are you saying bitter?
I think it has a very bittery herbal after note.
Okay.
Like, I think the first note from a rooibos comes out as nutty.
Yeah.
But then immediately after, it can go really bitter.
Yeah.
Which I hate. So I've actually been able to mask some of the bitterness with lemon notes.
All right.
And I think it actually works well instead of it being... I shouldn't say masked. I think it complements it.
Okay.
So I created Art Nouveau because it has like a very earthy taste to it.
Okay.
Unlike the rest of our teas. Well, I can't say all of our teas, but the majority of our teas almost have like a flavor burst, like kind of like a foodie.
Yeah.
Kind of note, little sweet at the end. This is very like just herb. It kind of reminds me of like apothecary.
Okay.
Like that vibe, like if you're into something that's, I guess, like just that like mild tonic-y sort of taste.
Yeah.
Like if you're a gin and tonic person, you probably would love this tea.
Oh, okay.
You know, like those after notes that you find in gin. Pretty similar.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And where does rooibos come from?
Oh, it comes from everywhere. I know that the honey bush version of it is from Africa. I think rooibos also comes from Argentina.
Okay.
Or I think that's the yerba mate, but I know it's somewhere around those parts.
Okay. Good
to know. I always get them confused. But, yeah.
Needless to say, international trade is wonderful.
Yes, but I will say definitely do not get yerba mate and rooibos confused, because yerba mate has immense amounts of caffeine
yes.
in it. Sometimes they say it's more than the regular Camellia sinensis, so don't do it. But yeah, the beauty of this tea, and I named it Art Nouveau, is because it reminded me of Klimt and Mucha paintings.
Oh, yes.
Just the color scheme of it. It has tons of rose petals in it, so it's got those pinks and blushes, and then the like bottom note of the amber rooibos.
Yeah.
But I've also added a little peppercorn to it and bits of lemon myrtle and lemon peel. So it's got almost that brush stroke look when you look at it.
Ah, lovely.
And it's gorgeous. And straight out of the bag, it just smells to me like, I guess, a rainy day at the museum.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
That's
and
lovely.
Like the lamp lights you would see at the, you know, across Paris, like the little lights that they would light in the 1800s. And you can tell I had a moment with this tea.
We had quite the romance with the Impressionist period.
Yeah. So it completely reminds me of that. And just Mucha also painted a lot for theater promotion. And they would start theater roughly around the time they would light the lamps.
Yes.
So that glow is kind of associated with it. And it has like the little bits of elderflower.
Oh.
So it really reminds me of just that whole vibe of like 1900s,
yeah.
early 1900s movie or like theater going.
Yes.
And like looking at paintings and appreciating art, like that kind of neo-Renaissance back then.
It's like Cinema Italiano.
Yeah, but do you remember there was the 1920s for Paris, but then before that there was that kind of a Renaissance.
Yeah, I think it was like in Russia when it actually began. It was like Sach Plakat.
Yeah, that kind of like luxe and appreciation for the arts and
yeah.
how it was a status.
It was like, it's weird because people actually mix the old Russian modern style
mm-hmm.
with French, you know, modern style when they like do the Gatsby style.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like kind of weird because I get it. It's American flapper.
Mm-hmm.
But like that glitter, like, like en vogue, I was his style was very much like more Eastern European rather than Western.
Right, right.
So it was fun. It was mm-hmm. fun. If you guys could hear the dogs in the background, we're terribly sorry.
Oh, we should mention we got new puppies.
Yeah, yeah. So
the brood has turned in from a duo to a quartet.
Oh, yes. I wish it was a string quartet. But rather, it sounds like, I don't know, like that original style of, like, banging music that, you know, that the Edwardians enjoyed or created. Have you heard of that?
No, I remember Duchamp. What is that random style that Duchamp was in?
Yeah, it was its own style. I totally forgot what that was.
Which is funny, because it's, like, your favorite
it is
movement. I guess while he's looking that up, I should bring up some random trivia that Eugene has always told me that when he gets older, he wants to look like Rembrandt.
Yeah.
As he aged with his self-portraits, but also he has, like, idled Duchamp, Marcel Duchamp.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the guy is fantastic. Practically screws around the art world, makes money off of it, and then becomes a chess master when he retires.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, dude, come on, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just so simple and sounds so, like, so much fun, you know? That's, I don't know, maybe it's just an ideal lifestyle, but I don't think it'll ever happen for me.
Yeah.
No, not well, like this.
Well, my heroes have been Warhol.
Yes.
And Matisse.
Ah.
Are probably my two favorites.
Matisse
favorite.
Was Fauve.
Yes.
Wasn't he?
I love the Fauve movement. Yeah. I love color. I love the idea of maximalism in all its forms.
Yes.
Less about clutter, but more about just color theory.
Yes.
I think people don't realize that. It's not really a cluttery style. It's more about pattern and color theory.
Dadaist.
Dadaist.
Ha-ha!
See,
yes.
That's what I was thinking about. You were talking about the randomness of the barks, and I was like, oh, it's got to be the Dadaist.
Oh, my goodness, right? It was amazing, because, how do they put it? It is the Dadaism is basically the father of, it wasn't EDM. What's that music that came out during, like, late 2000?
Electronica?
No. The one that made your, like, nosebleed.
I don't know.
You know, where, like, everyone was, like, shaking and, like, you know, they were just, they only had, like, one motion for, like, their movements.
Oh, I want to say dubstep. But
yes, it is.
Is it?
It's
oh,
the
no.
father of dubstep.
It oh, is, no.
Like, there are reviews of this, you know, of this music style. I just gotta find it.
Okay.
But it was just, everyone kept calling it like a junkyard music or something like that. It just sounded terrible, but dubstep perfected it. Like, wow.
Well, I mean, okay, interesting. So you can tell that on top of being book collectors, we promise we're not snooty people. We're just really into art history as well.
Yeah, I can't tell if we're crazy or just eccentric. I don't know.
Yeah, we promise you that we're not trying to snoot the world out there. In fact, this podcast is made so people can casually talk about these things.
Yes.
But I'd like to talk about, I guess, our history growing up around art books, because when we were preparing for this episode, I never realized it, but half of our shelf is art books.
Yeah.
That we just can't seem to get rid of. And I realized that a lot of the books we collect now was also mainly because of the children's book renaissance that I always bring up. But it was the idea of following those illustrators during my career, because for a while I was in the Children's Illustration Guild.
Yeah, I remember that.
When I was in college.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time coming, and I think our journey through art and appreciation of art and our careers now, you could safely say, are on our shelves.
Yes, so much so that we even worked with Frank Bedore at one point.
Yeah, we had Frank Bedore at our NinjaCon, and it was really amazing to meet him up front.
Yeah, I felt like yes, it was an anime convention, but it was the artist Ali that appreciated him and even recognized him. Like, they almost worshipped him when they were like, oh my god, he's sitting with us.
Well, rightfully so. I mean, this man is, talk about overachiever. Yeah, no. he's a Olympian medalist. He's a producer.
Yeah, something about he's Mary.
He's a publisher. He's a published author.
And comic book artist now.
Yeah. So it's incredible. But I actually picked up his stuff through an art book. It was his Princess Alice of Wonderland book. We should show them a link on Amazon, but it's just visually amazing and incredible. It's just a gorgeous pop-up book. It has a card game even attached at the end for you to play. And it's really fun. Yeah. But his whole thing has always been interactive.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I guess we should talk about the essentials of being a graphic designer, because I think a lot of people don't know how to appreciate some things until they know how things work.
I mean, yeah, so Eugene is switching out as the host for this season. Huzzah. And we figured since it's visual, it'd be better to ask me the questions. Yeah. But yeah, take it away.
So I found a list on Vectornator.
Vectornator. Okay, yeah. Tell me about this website.
It's basically a blog about nothing but, you know, design, art, and graphic books. And it's really cute because he even has his own portfolio on it. So I'm thinking he just wants to actually get recognition for his portfolio by showcasing what he understands through these blog posts.
Can I just say, on a side note, for someone who is a content creator for her business, that I appreciate when people give their knowledge for free because they show that they truly have a passion for it. And for those of you who are wondering, what do? I mean, the first thing I do when I do my consultation is, well, what do you get excited about? And tell me a little bit about your company and why you did it. And usually from there, you can tell what kind of content you need.
Yeah. Because a lot of people, when they share their stuff, they get scared that they're giving themselves away. But you don't understand. Like, a lot of times when people notice that you're willing to give things away, it makes them believe that you're invincible. Like, this is what you know, but this isn't what you're selling.
Exactly.
So it must be of higher value of what you're selling.
Yeah. I mean, it's like how I sell tea, but I'm marketing experience.
Yes. You are helping people appreciate tea.
Right.
Because, come on, Tea Spectral is the cocktail of tea.
Yes.
We don't pretend to be the wine of tea.
We don't pretend to be... I mean, are you just repeating my conversation with Kendra and Mary on our anniversary?
Do I not have the right to do so? That was an amazing conversation. People should have actually seen that.
Yeah, but we just drew our line in the sand and just said, look, we understand that there's an appreciation for connoisseurship here, but we're interested in the evolution of tea.
Yeah.
And mixing the idea of tradition and moving forward.
But anyways, that leads us back
to the article.
The article, because graphic design, as we know it, is an evolutionary industry.
Okay, so the title again is?
The title of this article is The 7 Best Graphic Design Books to Read in 2021.
Okay, so I probably have absolutely none of these, but I'm curious to see what they are.
All right. I say you've seen some of these, though.
Oh, okay.
All right. First one is the typography book, Just My Type.
That sounds adorable.
Have you not seen this?
I've seen that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's by Simon Garfield. A big part of graphic design are the fonts. Garfield's deep dive into typography implores you to look closely at your beloved fonts and realize their major contribution to any piece of design. machine.
Okay, do you want to hear something funny? I failed typography twice.
Was that with the Canadian teacher?
I had a Canadian teacher, and then I had a teacher from Italy.
Oh, no.
And I failed twice, but you know what? I'm so glad I did.
Right.
Because who doesn't use fonts on a daily basis, nonstop? Like, if you don't know fonts, you don't know.
Yes.
So, I didn't have to pay for refresher courses, I just failed it twice.
Yeah,
I can actually say that I've failed typography twice, which I still, like, crack up about every time I'm kerning fonts. No.
Which is hilarious, because those classes actually, like, opened your eyes and, like, answered all your questions from before.
Yeah.
You know, you always felt like, oh no, I shouldn't be mixing my serifs and sans serifs. That's a no-no.
Yeah.
And they're like, no. No, you're supposed to do this. It just doesn't look visually right. And that's the point of typography, is to make it visually wonderful.
Yeah. And it also helps you organize to mix up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's a weird, silly thing that occurred through the decades? When Times New Roman used to be the standard,
mm-hmm.
and now every freaking blog has Helvetica as its, you know, as its main font.
I hate that font.
And what's weird is that Comic Sans will be found no matter what, here and there, and it's like, how do you use this?
Okay, Comic Sans is like the Dogecoin of font.
Well, Dogecoin is going to be bigger now.
Well, Comic Sans had its heyday too, so, yeah, that's true. You know, prove me wrong, seriously.
I mean, people don't use Wingding anymore, and that was an amazing
font. I know people who use Wingding.
Do they?
Yes.
No.
Where do you think the evolution of emojis came from?
This is true. All right.
Anyways, enough typography nerding out.
The second one is Graphic Design Fundamentals by Michael Bayrut. I think you've seen this? You might have.
That a new one, or is that like a new edition?
I don't know. He doesn't say. What it does say is it's a protege of design legend Massimo Vignelli.
Okay, that's the one I know then.
And having enjoyed one of the most successful graphic design careers ever, Bayrut brings us this design manual. So it's a must-have for graphic designers out there.
Okay.
All right, let's see. Number three. Graphic design book about colors. Interaction of Color by Joseph Albers.
Oh my god, that looks so wonderful. Yeah. I love how he did an homage in his cover to one of the most famous Rothko paintings.
Oh right, because
with the color scheme.
Yeah.
You just realized
that? Yeah, I just realized that.
And then
that.
The cutouts are actually the Matisse style. So he just, like, homaged Rothko, Matisse, and, oh my god, I think that looks like Piet Mondrian also.
Piet Mondrian?
Okay. You know, like, the style with the cubes. I know Silverchair did a 3D version of his art piece for one of their albums.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Silverchair.
No, sorry.
No.
Piet Mondrian is actually like a lot of, when I went through college, a lot of my web design, yeah. I would actually, there was one time where we had to design our portfolio in web design class, and I literally took a Piet Mondrian painting, pasted it on the screen, and used it as like my graphic cut for like the side panel and the top, because it's so symmetrically balanced. I hope everyone that's listening either knows these artists or please go look them up. Yeah. I mean, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, this book is a complex color theory book.
Okay, I would love that. Let's put that on my list.
Yes.
And the fact that, like, he nods to the greats in his cover, I'm already sold.
I know. And it actually, he actually concentrates on vibrating and vanishing boundaries.
Mm.
Oh my god. Like,
I'm terrible at vanishing boundaries. I mean, look at my color selections. Okay, I always go opposite on the color wheels.
Okay, just to actually be a little dark here, half the artists that actually played with the theories of vibration and vanishing, I know them as people that commit suicide.
Yeah, that's true.
So, these should be really appreciated, because a lot of these people have gone crazy just trying to actually, like, come up with these
styles. Well, again, Rothko, and what did he do?
I know. Number 4. Brand Design Book. Designing Brand Identity. An Essential Guide for the Whole Branding Team.
Is that by Wheeler?
Yes, Alina Wheeler.
Well, look at would you look at that on the shelf? What is that?
Oh my gosh, it's a Wheeler.
I don't know. It's one of my favorite design brand identity books called Design Brand Identity. No, they come out with them every year, but the one I have, I love, I treasure.
Okay.
It's such a cool book. If anyone gets the chance to check one of these books, it doesn't matter what edition you get. It literally goes through the evolution of a logo, and it actually has, like, a whole article over what the company wanted to do when changing their logo, why they did it, how the company was evolving.
Nice.
So it dives more into the psychology of logos and why you need to constantly evolve your logos.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's one of my favorite books in terms of, like, graphic design art books.
I remember we had, like, long discussions when, like, all the companies were changing their brand. Like, McDonald's went from, like, happy-go-lucky 7-year-old to, like, mysterious college kid that seems to keep going back to his dorm room.
Really quick, what's your favorite evolution logo, modern one, as of right now?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, Walmart.
Walmart, why?
Because it literally went from Walmart, the, you know, the suburban lifestyle, to Walmart, turn me on, because it looks like a computer switch. Oh,
turn on?
Yeah.
So, a lot of people don't realize this, but I think Target branding is so ingenious.
Why Target?
So, I don't know if anyone noticed the switch, but they actually lowercased all of their logo and made it a little wider and softer. And the same thing with the dot. It's actually put a little more close together, so it looks, like, I guess more lush and chibi.
Yeah.
But they did that because it looks cuter in psychology and aesthetic, and it looks friendlier, but it also is geared towards a more feminine approach. Ah. Because their market is predominantly women.
Yes.
But it spans the target audience of not just mothers, but single women and so on and so forth.
That's interesting.
So the entire branding, next time you walk into a Target, even in their dollar playpen thing, that discount section, look at the fonting. Look at the things they're selling. Everything is, like, insanely feminine in a way.
Yes.
But yeah, I thought that was ingenious.
Okay.
But it's literally supposed to be like the chick version of Walmart.
Oh, that's adorable.
So, yeah. Fun fact. Check it out.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the next one?
All right. We are on number 5, Book Full of Inspiring Designers, which is Graphic Design Visionaries by Caroline Roberts. I think this might actually have Mr. Whipple in it.
Let me see it. Well, Mr. Whipple was a graphic design book called Squeeze It Again, Mr. Whipple.
Yeah.
Which talked about American branding.
But
it was actually by a guy, like, not Mr. Whipple.
Okay.
But it looks like the guy that wrote that book.
Yeah, it says here, this book presents the story of graphic design through the ages. It features inspiring stories of the 75 most influential graphic designers, along with full color reproductions of their horizon expanding work. Okay. Here we go. They have names. Stefan Magmeister, Wim Crowell, MM Paris, Studio Dunbar, and many more.
Yay.
Okay.
Cool.
Lovely. Moving on to number six. Book for all typographers and graphic designers called Grid Systems in Graphic Design by Josef Müller Brockmann.
Nice.
Have you seen this?
No, but it sounds very useful.
Okay. The legendary Swiss designer's graphic design book remains the definitive guide in mastering the essential principle of grid systems in any piece of graphic design.
I probably would have not failed typography twice if I had that.
Really?
Because I always failed the grid part.
Ah.
Because I was always like, no, we're going to break the rules. And I'm like, I need to prove that I can follow the rules first.
Yes. Well, isn't that just the case for everybody? Like, they want to actually feel edgy, but they don't know what they're actually rebelling against.
Yeah, that was probably a perfect example of my art college years.
This is not a craft. It is art.
I'm watching an anime right now. It's an old anime, but I finally got around to it. If anyone wants a good movie, it's Honey Clover.
It's a series,
but it embodies an art student's bane in the early 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
And the angst and the weirdness and the awkwardness, and it's so
slow-paced.
It's super slow-paced, but it's amazing if you're looking for, like, a Hige anime circa.
Oh my gosh, it is a Hige
anime. It's totally Hige. It shows, like, the form of building sculpture or cooking or painting or even graphic design. They had, like, web design.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Try it. Honey Clover.
Honey Clover's amazing.
All right. Oh, this one I remember. Number seven, inspirational design book, Steal Like an Artist. 10 Things Nobody Told You About Being Creative by Austin Kleon.
Yes, I know that one.
Yeah, like I could find it every time I would visit. It wasn't UPS, FedEx. For some reason, FedEx and Kinko's would have this.
It was like also the book that people would put on their tables to be like, look, I'm an artist, but I'm also edgy and ironic.
Yeah, which didn't really help, because that is actually essential. Like, guys.
It actually is a useful book.
Yeah. Like, you want to get through the industry. Like, use this book. It's actually nice. So, that is that. All number seven.
Fancy.
How did you feel about that list? Did you think it was a little more, I guess, like, collegiate, or do you think it was practical in the industry?
Because it was good for a beginner, but yeah, it's basically cheat codes.
Yeah, that's basically
is what you
it
got,
was.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Cliff Notes for graphic designers.
Right.
I do have one that I want to mention that was not brought in there, but it's very specific, but it's really awesome and everyone should totally check it out.
Mm-hmm.
The Packaging Designer's Book of Patterns.
Oh my goodness, this is a Bible.
It is so cool. It is literally, if you've ever wanted to do any kind of pop-up 3D or you're designing packages.
Yes.
This shows you just the length of folding, the intricacy. Many a times have I, for like special occasion prints, take this thing, whip it out, scan it, pop a design in Illustrator and stretch or alter it. And then just print the graphics straight on.
Yes.
But it's awesome.
I know, okay, speaking from, like, the legal perspective,
mm-hmm.
this book helps you understand what you can't patent. Because a majority of patents during, like, the early 2000s mm-hmm. were 3D design. They were just paper.
And I should also mention that all these designs yeah. are like royalty free.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I remember that show.
Shark Tank?
Shark Tank. Yes, the female judge. Mm-hmm. She was a huge patent entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
She literally designed like about like 100 to 200 of like these folding like chairs or boxes, mm-hmm. and that was literally her business.
Yeah,
you know, so it's genius to actually think outside of the box if you know what's already inside the box.
Right.
That's a lovely book, and you know, I think mine personally that you know I recently just got is Black Architecture and Monochromes,
mm-hmm.
and it's just an essential, you know, architecture book, just because it actually showcases what one color can do in allowing somebody to creatively build, you know, something different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny because if you go through Amazon, a lot of people that had this book during college, they were just like, oh yeah, everybody has it, you know, it's okay. And by the time they left, you know, graduating, they all miss it. They're like, oh my gosh, I wish I kept it, you know?
Oh, I kept so many of my art books. I just recently gave away some of them. One of the ones I just gave away, which I think I finally, I don't want to say I mastered it, but I have enough of a working knowledge, is I literally had this encyclopedia of all different types of medium, like traditional medium, like markers, pastels, you name it, and like the best way to use them and what they're noted for and how to prep them.
Yes.
And I just finally gave it away.
Oh, rough. I know another book I actually gave away was How to Draw a Comic Book, like from the mm-hmm. beginning to the end. And I don't know if that's the exact title.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, there's so many how to create mangas, how to make
comic books. Oh, this was before all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the lovely part about it was that it was literally at the peak of webcomics.
Mm-hmm.
So it went through the traditional medium on, like, the first 3/4 of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed you how to write the script, how to publish it, how to distribute it, and how it was just, you know, it's a labor of love to do mm-hmm. comic books. And when it got to the web comic books, it was like so funny because, you know, when web comics were just like so popular back in the day, like it was just kind of a no-brainer. Like, yeah, duh, you just publish it on the website and, you know, get your fans. But this one actually labored over the idea that when you make a web comic, you have to actually create a different standard for people scrolling.
Mm.
So technically, it was a psychological analysis of comic book readers.
Mm.
So I love that book. I miss that. With that, I wanted to also bring up this second article.
Oh.
Yes.
It's a 2-for-1.
Yes, a 2-for-1 deal here. I don't think we'll go through all 20, but the title is The 20 Best Coffee Table Books to Give According to Art People.
Ooh.
This is from The Strategist, written by Daisy Alioto and Maxine Builder.
Ooh, okay. Ooh,
yeah. I don't think we've seen any of these books.
All right.
I'm just going to say that right now.
All right, well, let's see the theory of.
Right. So, first one is Heavenly Bodies, Fashion and Catholic Imagination.
I have actually heard about that book.
Okay.
And I've watched the documentary for that book.
Oh my gosh, what?
Yeah.
I am ignorant, uncultured, and a swine. All right. So, you've seen this.
Yeah, they have, like, trailer documentaries. Yep.
What?
Mm-hmm.
You have?
Yeah. Oh,
dude, what's it like?
They go through all the different iconography.
Okay.
And how it had a lot of, like, government propaganda, but also, like, what they wanted the people to feel with it.
Okay.
Just YouTube it. Trust me. Okay. It was actually on my recommendations. It's funny you brought that up.
Oh, and here I was, like, ready for a surprise. Like, oh, yeah. All right. Well, Second one here is Sarah Berman's Closet by Myra Kalman. Have you seen this?
Yes.
How? Where have you seen these books?
On YouTube. I go on a documentary art
page. Oh my goodness. I feel so ignorant. Okay, oh, YouTube is literally your bae.
I play it in the background while I'm doing work, and it keeps me, like, I know people think, oh, you do consultations for trends. It's like, no, I watch art documentaries, and, you know, I check press releases on YouTube, like book releases.
Oh my goodness, you got it right.
I'm going to be so pissed if they don't have Elevated Style on that list, because okay, that's my favorite.
I'm sorry, I'm having chocolate cake with this tea.
Yeah, it's actually good. Rose, lemon, and chocolate? Come on, man.
Oh, yeah. Alright, this one, I'm sure you've had a few of these, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Pantone Solid Guide Set.
I wish someone would send me that. Really? Okay.
You have so many Pantone cards around here. I thought you'd have one.
I have Pantone as much as I can get, but I've never been gifted a Pantone box.
What?
No. I have... Okay, so the closest thing to that is I have Set Light samples.
Okay.
That are kind of in the same style as Pantone, but for lighting in theater.
Mm.
Where you can order the Pantone set of a light.
Right.
Like a gel light. Back in the day, now we have them LEDs.
Oh, the Gobos.
And I still have my mini key ring.
Oh.
Yeah, as a sentimental gift from when we were a theater company. I still have it in my art closet.
We technically still have a theater company, but it's more like a theater troupe now.
Yeah, and it's so much easier to reach an international audience doing online events. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So we're kind of ditching the old convention tradition.
Not to say that we won't be inviting people to an actual theater someday.
No.
Because we miss that ambiance.
Well, we have our big, beautiful theater in Pasadena, so...
We shall return.
Anyway.
Next one is Menu Design in America, 1850 to 1985 by Jim Heyman.
Okay, I don't know about that. That's awesome.
It looks like fun.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, it's from one of my favorite publishers, Tashen.
Oh, yes. Yep.
They're open again!
Yay! Oh, my gosh. Can I just say, are you one of those people, because I was in my 20s, does anyone steal menus?
Oh, no.
Because me and my friend would do that. We have a collection.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
I know that we came home with one of Chato's menus at one point.
Which is funny, but then they ended up turning it into a published production, and they, like, they just handed it to us.
Well, they were, like, it was the old menu, and, you know, it was getting dirty. And we were like, can we keep it? And they're like, it's stained. Are you guys okay with that? Like, yes.
Okay, menu-wise, do you want to hear something funny? So, before the pandemic, a while back, I stole a Trader Sam menu.
Oh.
From Disneyland Hotel. And then, sure enough, the other time during the pandemic, when we were doing the social distancing and the only thing that was open was Downtown Disney, walk into the Wonderland Gallery and what do I see? They freaking printed the menu and they're selling it. So I kind of feel like a guilty thief now because I have like the actual menu versus the artwork for the menu.
Guilty.
I know. Guilty, but guilty. I guess all of you can keep my secret. But I don't steal menus anymore just because the tables turned and then I worked in tea and I designed menus.
Yes.
And then I watched my menus that I designed get stolen. And then I had to get called in, thank you very much, at like 2 a.m. to have to get menus done ready so there would be enough to go around. So now I'm just like, I guess karma just totally took me by surprise. And I've learned my lesson, so I'm completely converted for the good now.
Justice has been served. So, moving on.
Yeah.
The shock of the new, the 100-year history of modern art. Its rise, its dazzling achievement, its fall, by Robert Hughes.
That sounds like fun.
I know. It's quite the mouthful, too. Have you seen this?
No.
No.
Okay. No. Do you feel good about yourself now?
Yes, I finally found something.
Okay.
It's, let's see. They wrote, witty, opinionated, and beautifully written, Robert Hughes' volume, now a classic, was a breath of fresh air when it was first published in 1980, in tandem with the BBC series of the same name. Wait, there's a series.
Oh so, and God. I haven't seen it? Okay, something's wrong.
Yes, we have to do this.
Okay.
Okay.
More tea.
Again, this is the shock of the new. Look for it! Alright, next one is Five-Fingered Being by Grace Rosario Perkins.
No, I don't know it.
Yeah, it's pretty, though. It feels like one of those small art galleries you'd actually, you know, find in, like, Islos or at Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's cute.
Well, let's skip a few. I'm going to go through these really quick.
All right, because there's, like, 20 of these.
Oh, these are cool. Okay, so James Turrell, Extraordinary Ideas Realized.
All right, what's that one about?
We showcase the works of contemporary conceptual artists whose primary medium is light and technology.
Ooh.
Mediums that were pioneered by James Turrell.
Huh. Yeah, I see. Huh.
And that sounds interesting, because in the book Nocturnal Notes,
yes,
art does that.
Okay.
Interesting.
Lovely.
Let's see. This one would be really fascinating. Soul of a Nation, Art in the Age of Black Power.
That looks like a Boys to Men album.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it looks like their winter or their millennium.
Oh, man.
Album.
Okay.
Not that I was collecting them
yet. No, not at all. I like the fact that it shows art and politics from the 1960s to the 1980s.
Huh.
I would actually be really fascinated to read that.
That would be fun.
Let's see. What's another one? Ooh, okay. I think this medium is really underappreciated.
All right.
So, Vitamin C, Clay and Ceramic in Contemporary Art.
Okay, you lost me with Vitamin C. What?
That's the name of the book.
Okay. What is it about?
It is literally about contemporary clay and ceramic work.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it showcases 100 of the most influential modern clay ceramic pieces.
That's intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think they were still relevant.
What is this? This sounds interesting. Okay, if not, the title just grabbed me.
All right.
Literally, Show Me a Healthy Person by Darcy Wilder.
Okay.
Everyone says the audiobook is phenomenal. It talks about the mix of mental health and just self-awareness as a modern artist having to deal with the cross of your pieces and dealing with social media and Twitter. I think that is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
But it talks about her personal journey and just dealing with that.
That's lovely.
That's really interesting. Oh, Gardens of the Highline. Elevating the Nature of Modern Landscaping.
That would be worth it, because can you imagine, like, having your guests sit and waiting for you, and they're stressing out because you have nothing but, like, I don't know, pop, like, vibrant stuff to look at, mm-hmm. and then you have something as calming as a garden.
Yeah, I would love that.
You know?
I'm ending there.
Yes.
Let's talk about... What table books do we have right now? I know we brought that up the last season, like I believe the first season. But right now I have the Dita Von Teese Beauty Mark.
Yes.
The Art of Walt Disney.
Oh, yeah.
I had out. And then what's in my shed right now?
I don't have Michael Jackson's poetry.
I have, actually what's out in the shed right now is, which by the way, reading in the shed has been amazing. I'm reading Committed.
Okay.
Which is the same writer as Eat, Pray, Love. It's actually the sequel to it.
Oh, lovely.
And it's her fighting the ideals of modern marriage and tradition and everything. And her journey to basically concluding the reason people get married.
Okay.
And what marriage is symbolically in the modern world.
I know that the cover is literally a ring.
It's a ring. It's a beautiful orange book with a ring. And then what other books do I have out there? I also have my Sommelier Encyclopedia.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Which is a visual encyclopedia, so I highly recommend it. It's a really great book for all tea lovers.
It's perfect for everybody that just wants to learn even more. Because I know it's supposed to be a beginner thing.
Uh-huh.
But it actually brings up, questions that you never even thought of asking before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so get it.
Yes.
I know you have...
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, sorry. I know you have a whole Selznick collection.
And... Yeah, I guess those are counted as art books. He really wanted them to flow like a noir film, so all of them are done in charcoal sketch, black and white.
It's a lot of work, and it's beautiful.
Oh, I want to talk about my anime art books.
Oh, we're going there.
Yeah, we're going there.
Oh my god.
Because those are some of the first art books I got, even before, you and me got together and we were friends.
Yeah.
Didn't I bribe you to get me one of them?
I did. Yeah, you did. You did.
So, I'm not going to tell the story again, but long story short, I went to the Art Center College of Design for a while, and one of my favorite anime artist Yukiri Sugisaki, who did Dian Angel and Pilot Candidate. Right. I think those are the ones he's famous for. He came out at the time where Copic just released their markers, and he was trying to show the blend between Copic, how you can use it for professional use markers. You need to keep in mind that markers in the day were originally used for architecture. In fact, when I learned markers in graphic school, I learned to do architecture with them. So using them in a medium such as comic books was really taboo and whimsy back then. And the same thing goes for Photoshop. I mean, Photoshop in the day was considered strictly just for photo editing. It was never considered an art medium. So when the Japanese came out with their art books, they would just come out with all these beautiful collections of art books in the early 2000s and late 90s.
Yeah.
That was just specifically to show off their skills with all these new mediums. And I was absolutely obsessed. And those are the things I would buy. And one Christmas, I think we were doing Secret Santa for our group at the time, Stargazers.
Yes.
And I just asked everybody, just please get me art books. In fact, my favorite Yugiri Sugisaki character, Dian Angel, the wall scroll's hanging in the shed.
Right.
And it looks like a gorgeous modern art piece. It's it never went out of style, but...
Yeah. It's even pixelated, too.
Yeah, and it's pixelated and everything, and I love it so much. It's, absolutely a fancy little vintage piece of anime, because it's, 20 years old now?
20 years old, wow.
But it looks totally in fashion now, because it's all coming back.
Yeah. The 90s style.
Yeah, but I used to collect that stuff, No Tomorrow. If you can find any of the older stuff, too, from, early 90s into the 80s, a lot of that print stuff shows like concept designs. I know I have an Oh My Goddess one.
Yes.
It's just gorgeous work. Yeah. And I still love getting a few of them. Oh, that's another one that's in the shed, is I got a new art book.
Which one?
Oh my god, I don't know the name of it because it's not on me. No. Well, I do have the Angel Sanctuary one, but this one's just a general artist.
Oh, right.
I think it's called Reflections, but it's her personal showcase. She's actually a studio illustrator. She's done a lot of work for like Marvel and DC and all kinds of mediums across, but this is like her personal portfolio. And it's beautiful. It's got all the sunsetty colors and the color melting digitally and everything. So I still collect art books.
I know I wish I could collect, but the artist I keep drooling over, his art is just hard to find. If you guys have ever heard of the show Kibagure Orange Road.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that guy's like... Oh, sorry, I don't know if it's a guy or if it's a girl. It's just, all I remember was watching the show when I was younger, and I would see all of the watercolor, you know, like portraits at Anime Expo and all these other auction dealers, and, you know, it used to be expensive, but now it's just rare. Like, I could afford it, but it's rare to find it. So... good stuff. Beautiful. I mean, I remember when anime was constantly, you know, published in watercolor. And you just can't find that anymore.
Yeah, I still have them hoarded.
Yes.
My little stash is well hoarded.
Yes.
But, yeah, that I think that consists the majority of my collection. I do have my naughty section.
My gosh.
Like, I wouldn't want to display it for random kids that come in, but I have Women Before 8 a.m., I think it's called. Oh, the
photography book, yeah.
And it's actually one of my favorite photography books, but it's a bunch of famous women, and this photographer shows up at their house at, like, I think 8 a.m. or sooner. Yeah. Like, right before they wake up, and they do nothing but photograph, like, their morning routines.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it has, like, candidness. There's a lot of nudity in it. because it just talks about them getting ready, taking a shower, preparing dinner or breakfast for their kids. Some people do yoga, some people garden. But it's just so lovely and candid. It's like a modern version of like art nudes, like the oil paintings.
Yes.
You know, just that natural, like relaxed ennui kind of vibe. But it's all black and white and probably one of my favorite thrift store finds. Yeah.
Wow, did we find that?
Yes, we did. And I got it for 50 cents, which I looked at up on Amazon, and it's worth a little bit more than that.
Maybe we should visit Aid Books and see what else we can actually get out of it.
Any other art books I can think of? I mean, art books is just such a span, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes some of these art books, people don't consider them as art books, but recipe books?
Oh, I have a really good one. It's in the kitchen.
Right.
But it's like, it goes through all the different provinces of France and then like traditional recipes that are found there. And then I just got a new one that I'm reading for research. I think it's, I'm like digging right now, making Eugene move so I can look it up. No, I'll find it, but it's actually a vegetarian cookbook by, oh, there it is. Naturally Vegetarian by Valentina Silfrini. And I know it's a cookbook, but it's so visually stunning, and I've actually loved it to the point where I'm literally like, seriously reading through it chapter by chapter.
Right.
But I just got through the preface of it, but apparently She's in this really, really old part of Italy that is still mostly countryside, and they have the occasional tourist, but it's super provincial, and she says about 98% of the food grown there or created in the village is from the land.
Huh.
And it's just a tradition that she wants to keep going, but she's younger, so she just started documenting these things, and then it became a famous blog.
Oh, wow.
But she calls it naturally vegetarian because, again, most of it is living off the land, and when you're, she talks about, like, the moral, conviction when you raise your own flock, you raise your own goats, you don't want to just kill them all the time, you know? So, she just talks about living off the land and the tradition and just the respect of life. And the quality of life, and that's pretty much how far I've gotten, but I can't wait to dive more into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's lovely. Well, I know that I'll be publishing a graphic book later this August.
Yes, Stefan. I'm looking forward to that. You have two.
The second one's coming next year.
Next year. Well, that one's quite the endeavor, but we'll see. But yeah, Stefan is phenomenal. He's actually a graduate of Otis.
Yes.
He's
hailing from Long Beach. Basically, he's grew up in Torrance.
Yeah.
But like, he's a Black American, but he is highly influenced by, you know, Japanese pop culture.
And that's actually how we met him, through our conventions and stuff. And he's just the sweetest guy. He's super soft-spoken.
Yeah.
I did have the pleasure of spending lunch with him once. And he tells me that he's just very influenced by the idea of optimistic culture.
Yes.
And, like, he particularly has an affection for electronica boy bands. but that's what he uses and listens to while he's doing his art. And I think what I always loved about Stefan's art is, even though it's like very poppy and 2D, like, it was always constantly influenced by his friends and his surroundings. We actually did commission him at one point to make the Azure Lorica
dragons,
the anti-bully dragons, and they were gorgeous.
But
yeah, I think it's very Pokemon, right? He was influenced by Pokemon. And
yeah, we have a exclusive contract with him.
Uh-huh.
And when I mean exclusive, I mean he stopped doing art. So his collection is...
Oh, so this is like his nod to him because he stopped doing this style.
Yes, so it's very limited now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the, you know, the humble pleasure...
Mm-hmm.
Of actually, or honor, I should say. We have the honor to actually release his artwork in print.
And I think it's just such a treasure because I think for the Southern Californian convention community, he's really caught the evolution of that convention scene in that community.
Yeah.
And I really think that he's a major part of that history.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, a lot of people don't think about that. They're like, oh, it's a convention, what can you do? But think about how many thousands of people gather to these things, and the way they're influenced by things. I mean, even the pandemic was recent, and think of how much the convention industry has evolved just simply because of that.
Exactly.
And people like Stefan are like literally timepieces.
Yeah.
And I don't say that lightly. I think it's something really to consider.
Yeah.
It's a pop culture in itself.
It is. It's lovely. I'm just gonna, like, leave it there, and I want you guys to actually catch it this coming August.
Yes.
You can catch his books on release at azurelorica.com, and being that this is an exclusive release and first announcement in Bibliosynensis.
Yay!
we hope that we can actually have everyone drink some tea with us as we have the show happening This August, the book Dragon Fate hosted at the Azure Lorica Summer Gala.
Oh, fun. So we're kind of doing a block party then.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay. I
mean, we're going to have T-Spectral, you know, sponsor the whole event. Yay. Thank you. Really, thank you. And with the grace of staff here, we've been able to actually continue this service to the public. And we hope to find more artists.
Come support small artists. Come and have a conversation with them.
Yes.
Share stories. And yeah.
Yeah, just show some love.
Yeah.
Being that, I would like to toast to the artists out there and to this journey we've actually been through as artists.
Mm-hmm.
And all thanks to being this, you know, having this support, T-Spectral.
Oh, thank you.
Really, like, this is amazing.
It's a dream job to have everything tie together.
Yes.
Like, the fact that my job is to talk to people about books and tea and art is really just probably the best thing I could ever think of. So, cheers.
Cheers.